you writing on a typewriter? Like, what is that noise?
No, it's the light. I'm trying to...
Oh! Sounds like a typewriter.
I'm still trying to figure out what my best look is, and none of them are, so... Whatever. I'll just go back to... Oh my god, I gotta take this off. Do it better. Oh, fuck. It shit's bright, man. It hurts. Oh my god.
And yeah, it looks painful. You should wear your eclipse glasses.
I should. I should have bought those things too. I did not.
Aw. You're not gonna go look at the eclipse? Take your 10-minute break.
Yeah. We should probably start talking about the situation at hand.
The situation.
Yeah. I need to right off the bat. I need to know. Did you like it? Did you hate it?
I didn't hate it.
I had a feeling.
Why? What about this movie to you screamed like, oh, Lisa might like this?
not that you would like it. I think just because of my immense disdain for it that you had to like it in some fashion. Like, there was no way we were both on the same page with this.
Yeah. It was, okay. I want to qualify because it was not a perfect movie. I didn't love watching it. And if I have to choose, I will probably never watch it again for the rest of my life. However,
well, I had to rewatch it. And I think the second time, like when we watched Nocturnal Animals, it was my second time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a new outlook on it. Like, I kind of understood the premise more, maybe, and tried to give it the benefit of the doubt, but at the same time, no, still didn't hit like it should have, I guess.
Yeah, okay, and let's get into it. This is I Hate It, Let's Watch It. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Dawn.
And we are discussing The Strays, a 2023 Netflix movie, and I think my feeling on the overall experience was that I found the first 45 minutes, fine. Like, compelling, interesting, intriguing, a little unsettling. And then things, like, kind of hit a wall in the second half of the movie to the point where I was, like, checking the time to be like, how much is left of this? Like, we gotta be close because what else can you do here?
Right.
So I didn't hate the story arc. I think it could have been a little bit shorter. And they could have even maybe done more with it than they ended up doing.
Yeah.
But I also felt it was a bit predictable because I kind of saw where they were going with it fairly early on. And
really?
Then, yeah. And then I don't know why. I just, they weren't subtle. That's my other thing with it is that they really weren't tiptoeing around things. So I think it's very clear immediately. Is it Nev? Or Neve.
Nev.
Okay.
I say Nev. They were saying Neve, but also they're English.
British. Yeah.
Yeah, and we are not. Okay. Because I think Nev Campbell, so I think Nev.
Right.
And then
yeah, but then
Neve.
They were saying Neve, and I was like, okay, well, I'll just be British for today. So they were making it pretty obvious from very early on that Neve is trying very hard to be white when she is black. And that she holds such hatred, or at least self-hatred, of her blackness. And it's so obvious. You know, she's wearing the wigs. She's changing her accent. She is upset when she sees that her kids are trying to embrace black culture. And so it's, like, so obvious from the get-go that she's uncomfortable with this part of her. That when these two mysterious black people start showing up and she's so agitated by it. It's not even that it's just a reflection of herself, but like it's a reflection of her past. It was just so clear to me. I was like, oh, these must be children she abandoned.
Right. I think that was easy enough. I mean, when they initially introduced Carl, is it? Carl's the son?
Yeah. I mean, he gives a couple of different names, but
Carl's his actual name. Carl's his real name. Initially, his introduction is just a janitor, and you're like, oh, she's just hating on him because he's black, which is weird because you're black, and this is just weird. So, I mean, initially, it was just kind of like, oh, he's just the janitor, and she's just being weirdly racist. But, yeah, I guess we should start from the beginning because it's she tries to change her identity, and I'm putting that in quotes, to change her identity. We start with she's Cheryl. That's her. That's right. Her
name
Cheryl.
Is her actual name is Cheryl.
Yeah, and she clearly is having a really rough go at life at this point, and she's alone in her home, and she's on the phone with her sister, and she's just basically saying how everything, like, she's just run down, and, you know, no money, everything is just awful, and we see the wheels churning in her head, kind of, just trying to get an escape route.
Yeah.
And she goes to start writing a note to leave, and she keeps getting phone calls from her husband. And off the bat, you're just kind of like, okay, her husband's trying to contact her. Like, we don't know anything else. He's calling her cell phone, calling the house phone. She's not answering. She does get freaked out when the mail gets delivered. She, like, that somebody's home, somebody's going to catch her.
Yeah, I guess she thought somebody was coming in, probably her husband.
And we find out she leaves a note on the fridge, and it's basically saying that she went out to get her hair done. And the next scene you see is, now, it doesn't give a specific time frame. It just says years later.
Yeah. I was like, how many
Which we need
years?
To discuss this because given the ages of all the kid, like, and how she looks, it's my time frame abilities here are not great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She doesn't look all that much older than her son. Her first son, Carl.
But yeah, and then we see years later and it's her sitting at her vanity rehearsing her basic morning speech of hello to the neighbors. You know, it's it's weird. It's very awkward.
It's a bit Stepford Wives-y. Very. Know? Like, you can, and again, like, this is the beating you over the head with the fact that this is not who she really is. She's putting on a performance of being this person.
Yeah. And at first, I mean, I understood the whole, like, her not wanting to be black anymore and all that. But the wigs didn't really seem like a giveaway, only because many black women wear wigs all the time. So I'm like, oh, that is a black thing, though. So I didn't necessarily pinpoint that as the, or trying to avoid, it was trying to avoid her natural hair. I understood that.
Sure. I think what connected that for me was the way she reacted to seeing her daughter Mary starting to have more traditional black hairstyles and the way that she was just so repulsed by that. So to me, then I was seeing her wigs as a white woman's hairstyle kind of thing, and that her hair won't do that naturally, so she has to wear the wigs. And I think without those two things happening together, I would agree with you. But it's just, she definitely seems to have a problem with hair, with a black woman's hair versus a white woman's hair, and trying to make her hair as white as possible.
And her husband, Ian, is a white man. And he does at one point say to her, I like your natural hair. So she hasn't been hiding it since the beginning with him. Like, he knows of the natural hair. He, you know, so right.
Must have seen her transformation from, from street urchin to fancy,
which
pretend
she really,
white woman.
She really does try to sell her old self as a sea urchin. You're completely correct.
Oh, yeah. And I don't think that's accurate.
No, not at all. But she really looks at her old self as this disgusting human being. And it's really sad, actually. I was sad throughout some of the movie, actually.
I wasn't really sure how much to believe of what she said of her previous marriage and life. Because she says that she left him because he was abusive and she just needed to escape. But her sister, when she's talking to her on the phone in the beginning of the movie, she makes it sound like their poverty is self-induced because they are living beyond their means. So for me, I'm like, okay, well then maybe it didn't really have anything to do with your husband's abuse and you just weren't happy that he couldn't provide enough for you.
Yeah.
And you wanted to just start over and try again in a white family?
It was...
in a white neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, you could... Throughout, you could just tell it's the growing selfishness.
Yes.
I mean, the whole thing is selfishness. It's her, I can't do this anymore, and I'm literally just going to walk away.
Yeah, her, Olivia Colman, and Dakota Johnson should all get together and talk about how much they hate being moms.
It would be a great crossover because, holy shit.
Next thing you know, she's on holiday in Greece or wherever the fuck.
Yeah, this totally could have been Lost Daughter territory.
Mm-hmm.
Lost Son literally as well.
And Son, okay. Yeah. It does seem like the father might have been not so great, because it sounds like he didn't take very good care of these kids.
No.
She dumped them off with an aunt.
But who then got rid of them.
Want them. Yeah, so like maybe the dad wasn't even involved. Like, I'm not really sure. We don't really get enough, and I don't trust Neve or / Cheryl enough to believe everything she has said. I think she was trying to really ham up the tragedy and trauma of her past to mm-hmm. make her family more accepting of what she did to these kids.
Right. And I mean, the more we talk about it, the more I even realize, like you said, it's self-inflicted poverty. It's so
mm-hmm.
you're just running away from mistakes you've made, and you're right. trying to create stories so that people feel sorry for you when you could have changed, mm-hmm. you could have fixed it. Or tried right. to fix it, and you just ran away. So really, nothing is going to make you look good when saying no, you abandoned and your children.
She must realize. Yeah, she must realize that. Because, I mean, even when, like, Ian's like, I want a divorce, and, like, he's like, who are you? What person is this?
He didn't have to think twice, either. He was immediate. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
No, I mean, it's an awful thing to admit to, and I did feel at least an impulse to try to hear her out, because... You know, you hope somebody like this, if they were young, if they mm-hmm. were stupid, that hopefully they've had and experienced some growth. But she also really doesn't seem to have, because her priorities are all fucked up. So the ending of the movie did not surprise me at all, because this is a pattern of behavior for her. She just is constantly choosing the selfish way out. And I hope she gets what's coming to her.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see if, I mean, obviously it's a cycle that's going to continue.
Sure. Yeah, she's just gonna throw it out and start over the next time she.
But now, you're gonna have like, four kids on your fucking ass.
Showing up on your doorstep, trying to kill you,
trying to flood your house. We got to talk about that.
Yeah, you know.
God.
But you know what's funny is at some point in the movie, I started to wonder. I think maybe because we just watched Shattered, if this was some kind of scam that they were running. Just to get money out of her, because obviously they probably figured that she would try to buy them out and get rid of them. So imagine, like, what a great idea this would be to just get some cash. And because I was wondering how they were able to afford what they were able to afford.
Yeah.
Because they stay in a really nice hotel.
That was a crazy looking hotel, by the way. That the outside, the architecture was insane.
Oh, yeah. Well, everything in... in England is just like so beautiful. Yeah. It's very annoying.
But yeah, it was very like between that, the clothes they had with them.
Yeah, so where did they get all that money from is my question.
I don't know.
And then that made me feel weird throughout, because then I was like, is this like a scam? Do they do this to lots of different people? Do they find white women or black women pretending to be white women and then pretend to be their children?
Right, and this just so happened to work out in their favor, like
just to get payout. It would be really
they
crazy.
Seem
it would be almost as crazy as Shattered. Yeah,
they kind of seem like professional scammers now that I think about it.
They do. And like, and they were so over the top. It reminded me a lot of Shattered, because they seem to really enjoy inflicting chaos on this woman and her family. And I don't know where they got the money that they were using to fund this whole operation.
Yeah.
That feels shady to me, but they never explain it. And
there's a lot that's not explained. Like, I said with the ages, like she did say it was 17.
They throw out a lot of numbers,
and I'm trying to figure it out, because I'm thinking, well, we don't know how old they are when she left.
Correct.
Right off the bat, so like they're not babies. Like, who knows? They could be
they could five be five,
12. Yeah. Like, who knows? And they show up as adults, like legit adults, and she has two children that are teenagers.
Right.
Pretty much a year apart, I would say, a year or two apart. But pretty much adults in their own right. So I'm looking at this as, like, she's hesitant because obviously there are these two black people who are infiltrating her now perfect life. And it's freaking her out and all this. But there's no proof that these are her children. We never sit there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead.
That was the other thing that made me think that it could be a scam, was because I was like, well, actually, we don't know that these are her children. Maybe they knew her children. They were friends with them or something. And they realized that they could hit up a big payday if they pretended to be her kids. And, you know, but, and part of my mind was working on that subplot throughout the movie. And so that's why I say that, like, the movie was too long, but also it didn't have to be too long if they had sort of filled in some of these gaps and maybe embellished a little bit on some of these other ideas.
Yeah, some of the slower portions could have been filled in with a little more research. Because it was, well, research in terms of her. Like, she's
trying to verify their identities.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, and then every time she scratched her hair, I got itchy.
I felt like I had head lice while I was watching this movie. I was so uncomfortable.
The worst part is that, like, so my hair is thinning, whatever. So I've been using all these different things, like sprays and lotions and oils, like, for my head. So I'm just sitting there, she's scratching, and then I'm sitting there, and I'm scratching. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. But
I know.
Yeah, and you knew it was a subconscious thing of, like, the wig's got to come off. She's got to show her true self.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean by just, like, very thinly veiled symbolism. It's like, okay, we get it. She's hiding under that wig, and it's starting to get uncomfortable.
Yeah, so basically, when we're introduced to her as Cheryl, we get this whole thing, and we see her hesitance towards other Black people and just her weird hoity-toityness that she's developed as trying to be the suburban white woman. And then they say, I forget the time, it was like 5 days earlier or something like
that. Yes.
And you see Carl and Dion basically working their way into this family's lives. And
it's
Carl becoming the janitor because Neve, Cheryl, is the headmistress at the school.
A very hoity-toity private school.
Exactly. And Dion starts to work for Ian at his insurance, like, brokerage company. That's how we see the beginning of the infiltration. And I noticed that Dion is way more emotional about it, which I guess kind of made me believe, like, okay, maybe they really are the kids, because she just, like...
Yes. Yeah. She obviously feels like she was cheated out of a childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt the most sympathy for her.
Yep.
Although, you know, it kind of unravels in the last half hour of the movie.
It gets really bad.
Because it's strange. Like, they're both obviously emotionally traumatized by what they went through, but they're almost able to keep a lid on it much better in the first half of the movie compared to the second half of the movie. And the escalation into the level of psychosis that occurs was a little bit jarring to me. It was just kind of like, whoa, how are you able to work for Ian in his insurance company and be like totally fine, totally normal?
Mm-hmm.
But now you're like, let's play Scrabble. I need to play Scrabble. It's my birthday. We gotta play Scrabble.
Right.
Like, and it's, what is happening?
Yeah, it got really bad. And again, the infiltration got deeper because then they got to the kids because you got Carl offering and giving Sebastian cigarettes, like, in the woods. And then
teaching him how to be a man.
Yeah, and, like...
Which apparently means kicking the shit out of your bully.
Yeah, I mean, whatever works. and then Dion's the one that ends up doing Mary's hair. And they have, like, a little party back at the hotel. And... Again, that's where I felt really bad for Dion, because you could tell, like, she missed out on having a mother and this type of a childhood, and then yet she doesn't want to hate Mary because she likes Mary, like, she ends up liking Mary, like, and I think that's what I didn't like about the movie was, I understand you're punishing everyone to get to her, but obviously it's not phasing her. So stop hurting the rest of them. Like, it really bothered me. It really bothered me.
Yeah, and I feel that too, and I think maybe that's why I was so uncomfortable with the last half of the movie, because I didn't feel like they were going about it the right way, and that's so stupid to say, though, because they literally did not have any tools for processing this trauma that they went through and for mm-hmm. the feelings that they're having of abandonment. They don't know how to deal with it. So, of course, they're going to lash out at other people who maybe don't deserve it. Ian is, like, the worst that comes to mind.
That made it's just me like,
I don't
so
understand
sad.
What he had to do with anything. And he was trying to help pretty much the whole time, trying mm-hmm. to calm people down, give them what they wanted, work with them. He was equally offended when he found out that Cheryl had tried to pay them off. You know, he was going to do all the right things, and the fact that he got the end that he did.
Yeah, that was upsetting. It was very sad. I didn't. Yeah, and you're punishing those kids too, because now
right.
Yeah, like, no, it's just
dead.
Their dad's dead. Like, you didn't have to fucking kill him. And
no. And why would you take your anger out on that person specifically? Like, I don't understand that. And I don't
Again,
know.
Again, I think it was a test against Cheryl. Like, how far do we have to go to get it through your head that, like, you fucked
what
us up?
What did they want from her, though?
I don't know, because they got the fucking £20,000, which...
Right. It's not a small sum of money. I understand that that doesn't make up for what she did to
it
them.
It doesn't.
And clearly...
But it's funny that happened after, though. Like, she gives them the money. She sits down with them. She tries to be a little... I mean, again, it's not solving anything.
You can't apologize for something like this. Like,
no.
You have to start with action, you know? And I think maybe she chose the incorrect action by trying to give them money. Because Dion is like, so, like, are we going to move into the big house with you? And she's like, ooh, well, that's a great question. And we're not going to answer that right now, but here's some money. And, like, that was just not the right way to go with that. But also, it is a complicated question because it involves Ian and her other children, and they have to weigh all of that. I don't know what the right move was here, but I can tell you that it wasn't giving them a check for $20,000 and telling them to get the fuck out.
Yeah, that was... You know, I mean, did she do it in as polite as a way as she could have? I think so. She was like, you know, I think, like, you take this money and you go back to London and you figure some things out.
It just
and then
did not
we'll,
seem...
We'll circle back.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't get a genuine sense from her that she ever intended to try to work things out with them from that point on.
Yeah.
So I think they felt that.
Yeah. And I don't know how she thought that this was going to be the, like, that would work.
Right.
Given all of the tactics they've tried so far, and this is before they break into the house.
Right. They're mildly threatening. And so mm-hmm. I think she's right to be cautious, but I do wonder what exactly they were looking for from her. If she had said, yeah, come on, move into the house, would they have been fine?
Satisfied? Right. That's,
I don't think
that's
so.
My question too.
Maybe for Dion, but not for Carl. I think Carl has got some real issues he needs to work out in therapy.
Yeah. But again, like you said, we really don't get much of the backstory anymore. You know, they break into the house and... Of course, they're starting the whole, and it's Dion's birthday on top of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, we're going to
celebrate. She's wearing a party hat.
She's wearing a party hat.
So festive.
And she immediately goes upstairs, turns the bath on. I forgot about that.
Right.
And then he takes all their, he manages to steal their phones. He puts them in the sink, runs the water.
I don't know how he does that unnoticed. He went into every single bedroom and took their phones with nobody noticing. I mean... I'm a light sleeper, so maybe that's just hard for me to imagine, but it would not happen.
It took a while for them to notice anything.
Yeah, like, well, they broke into the house in the middle of the night, and there's so many lights on the first floor. It's like, what a waste of electricity. I thought that they were, like, still kind of awake, but everybody was upstairs asleep. And yeah, they turn on the television and start watching at a very high volume, and it takes a long time for anybody to go investigate. To the point...
Dion starts making toast and tea.
Yeah.
Like, she just
to the
starts.
Point where I was starting to wonder if they were not in the same house. I was like, wait, I thought this was their house, but maybe they went into a different house.
Oh my gosh. And then Sebastian's the first one to wake up, and he notices Dion in the hallway, and she's like, oh, I'm, you know, starting a bath, whatever. And then slowly everybody starts to get up, and Carl... is like, listen, it's Dion's birthday. We're here to celebrate, whatever. We're going to order Chinese now. It's like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, I'm sorry, sir, but they're not open.
Right. Yeah. Good luck with that.
I'm like, go ahead, pass that menu around because you're not getting Chinese food.
Yeah.
And he's just extremely blunt and demanding and forceful of them. And he's like, what are you guys ordering? And then it's just nonstop, like, scare tactics
right.
going forward.
Because it's obvious that they're not there on, like, a happy courtesy call. Mm-hmm. And especially because he's been flooding the downstairs of their home. Like, he starts the sink and clogs it so that he's like the wet bandits. And
yeah,
there's like 2 inches of water on the floor. So obviously they're not there to make friends, but he is still acting in an objectively friendly way by saying like, oh, I'll buy. It's on me. I'll get whatever you guys mm-hmm. want. You sure you don't want anything? Because I'm going to get this. Let's play a game. Let's do this. Let's do that. But like the undertone is like, someone's going to get hurt here. And I just haven't decided who it is yet.
Yeah. And I mean, I think what bothered me too was just, again, Cheryl's just blasé-ness about the whole thing. Like, she just kind of, where everyone else is questioning things, and Ian's trying to figure out how to make them happy, and the kids don't know what to fucking say, and you literally just have Cheryl standing there like, you could see the scheming in her head, like, I gotta get the fuck out.
Right. Well, she's not used to being held accountable for her behavior.
No.
That's not something she's familiar with. So, you can see it turning, the wheels turning, and it's not, how do I get us out of this? It's, how do I get out of this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think she especially feels that when Ian is like, I want a divorce, and then she tries to play nice with him when they're playing Scrabble, but she has realized, I think, in that moment that there's nothing to salvage here, that she's fucked up too badly, and the only thing she can do is fucking run.
And, well, before they play Scrabble, and they find out that the Chinese food place is closed, obviously, mm-hmm. he's like, do you guys have Uber Eats here?
Yeah.
Like, Uber Eats. So he has Mary order Uber Eats from wherever. And then they go to play Scrabble. Well, they send Sebastian to find a board game because mm-hmm. that's the whole thing. They really want to play a board game and be a family.
Right.
And what kept driving me nuts was just hearing the sloshing in the water. Like, just fucking mm-hmm. turn it off.
I know, like,
turn
I know. Thank God she turned it off eventually because I was like, I'm going to lose my mind.
Like, the minute I came downstairs, I would have fucking
yeah,
turned it off.
Like, how can you, like, how can you just sit there knowing, like, everything is just, this, like, cleaning this up is going to be a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. Like, I know it's not the time. But
yeah,
also,
I know.
Like, let's
I know. It's like, it's
trying to
like,
prevent
am
more
I
damage
live to clean this up. But if I do, I might as well be dead because this is going to cost right. a fucking fortune to refloor this entire house.
Oh, God. So then they find the Scrabble and they're all sitting down and they're like, okay, we'll team up. And it's obviously the girls, the boys, and the parents. And this is when Cheryl flips a switch and she's like, well, first of all, she threw up in the water and that was disgusting.
I know. I was like, they're all standing in her vomit.
They're all
now.
Walking in throw up water. Ew. It's disgusting.
At least it was before the Chinese food.
Yeah. And she is like after she throws up, she's then has an epiphany and she's like, all right, let's do teams. We always do teams. And like, she gets all this like cheery, like finally putting on the act.
Yeah. Well, and it was funny when she first said teams, I thought she meant Microsoft Teams. Cause obviously now my brain is just eroded to the point where I'm like, oh, Teams means Microsoft Teams, doesn't it? Let's get on a video
right.
chat.
Right. It's Scrabble.
Let's call
teams.
Your dad.
But anyway. So they get into pairs of two, whatever. And they start playing, and it seems like it'll be okay, but you see Carl just still mean mugging in the corner. Like, he is not, he's still not satisfied.
Right.
And he randomly asks Ian, like, do you work out?
Do you lift, bro?
And he's like, no. He's like, well, I saw a gym mm-hmm. over there. Like, you have a home gym. Let's go, show me what you got, basically.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck. And as that's going on, they hear the motorcycle outside of the Uber Eats guy. And they're like, fuck, somebody's here. Like, so Cheryl, again, in her just completely shut off form, she goes, "Oh, Sebastian, do you know where my purse is?" And he's like, "I think it's upstairs," as he's about to just break down because he's just mortified.
Trying to hold
sad.
It together.
Yeah. And, well, she goes to the door, gets the food, and she goes, "Wait right here, I'll be right back to tip you." And as that's happening, you just hear Ian
is
in the gym
fighting
tortured.
For his life.
And she, like, goes to look and gives it a quick glimpse and just walks away. Like, doesn't even try to help him. Nothing.
Nope.
As we then see, Carl just kept putting weights on weights on weights on him to where it collapsed on his chest.
And see, this is
so
why
sad.
I don't work out, because the amount of weight that I would not have been able to hold over me is probably not enough to have killed me if I dropped it on myself. It would be like 10 pounds and I'd just be like uncomfortable, but it wouldn't kill me.
No, so he just kept, he overdid it. And you hear the unfortunate rib crush. So that was not great.
Yeah.
So yeah, so then Cheryl gets her wallet and her bag and she walks towards the front door and leaves.
Yep. She pauses to say, "Once we're done eating, we'll talk about this and we'll figure it out." And then she just walks for the door and she's fucking gone. And they hear the motorcycle leaving and they all get up. They're like, "Where's mom?" And they go out and look. And lo and behold, she has abandoned them all. Some for the second time.
And it's just like, thinking about it now, she could have done this several times.
Yeah,
I only know
sure.
about these two.
Yeah.
Like, there could have been many other times. But the fact that she has no fucking conscience and can just say, "Not working for me."
Right.
Out.
Yeah. And abandon her kids and leave her kids to an unknown fate. They could die because they don't know. I mean, obviously, we know Carl is capable of murder now. So she doesn't know what she's leaving her children. But she didn't know that when she abandoned them in the first place. Carl and Dion. So, like, she sucks. She's probably one of the worst people we've had to talk about on this podcast.
She really is. Just how that ends with the four of them staring at the door. And, like, honestly, the faces of Dion and Carl were more, like, typical. And then you had the Sebastian and Mary, like, "We're fucked."
Right,
like,
yeah.
Either we're going to die, like you said, we're going to die right now, or it's
we have no parents.
Yeah.
Our dad is dead. And our mom just left. We'll probably never see her again. What are they going to do? It's devastating for them. But for some reason, I really liked that ending.
It was one of those endings of like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Like, it's worth talking about, obviously.
I think it's definitely an interesting conversation. And I would love to know, because I felt this way after watching American Fiction this year. I wonder what sort of impression Black people get from watching a movie like this.
Mm.
Because I feel like we have to see everything through our white girl lenses. And so I wonder how this movie hit them and if they felt like it did more good or more damage to racial dynamics and like how that interplays.
Oh, yeah.
So I would love to hear that perspective. But I thought it was a memorable movie.
Yeah, it sticks with you. But again, I just remember watching it the first time, kind of. It was more of like a, what the fuck? And I think because of all the gaps in really finding out anything that happened in the past, or like just that we didn't get everything, and it going from 0 to 60 after an hour. Like, you're right, the beginning, very slow, whatever. And then it picks up in the end only for that to happen. And you're like, okay, now.
I think that whole hostage situation just went on for a little bit too long. It made me uncomfortable to watch. And I think we got it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I think that part could have been shorter. And then that time could have been used earlier to kind of fill in some of the blanks that we were discussing. You know, I felt like it was building to something. And then we lost a lot of that tension waiting for something to happen. But overall, I didn't think it was too bad.
It wasn't the worst, but it was definitely one of those ones that I felt like, yeah, we didn't get enough and it bothered me. And
I was convinced that this was based on a book. Like, it just seemed like it would be. And
yeah, it definitely could be.
Especially the way that it kind of had chapters or parts mm-hmm. to it. I was so convinced. So I Googled it, but it doesn't appear to have been based on a book. No. So I was a little disappointed about that because I do actually think this would make a really good book because you could address some of that backstory a bit more thoroughly than they did in the movie.
Do people ever do the reverse where, like, they make a book out of a movie?
I don't know. I mean, people write fan fictions. I don't know if that's the same thing.
That's true. I mean, maybe. Only because, like, if we were to rewrite this, we could have given a more of a backstory to
it. Yeah, you could reverse engineer it. I think that would be worthwhile, honestly.
But you're right. As two white chicks watching this film, I am a little curious to know, like, were Black people offended by this movie?
Right. How did it make them feel?
Yeah, because it's especially, and I'm sure it happens everywhere, but, like, watching a Black man deal with his mother trying to avoid the fact that she's Black, I mean, that's a deep, deep-rooted issue.
Absolutely. Not to mention abandonment is, like, very common. So it's
like,
just,
it's a lot of trauma. Like, on top of just being abandoned, like, this woman doesn't even want to acknowledge that she is Black and she gave birth to you.
Right.
Like, that is devastating. Mm-hmm. And but then you have people like Rachel Dolezal, who's like, I want to be Black. And then now has an OnlyFans. And
she has a lot going on.
There's a lot of mental. But again, that's. And I did find it interesting that the movie kind of thought that they tricked us, thinking that Neve and Cheryl were two different people.
I don't think anybody thought that.
Well, no, because afterwards, obviously, you know, I start reading shit and trying to read synopses if I missed anything or if I was supposed to maybe see something that I didn't, whatever.
Yeah.
And a lot of the synopses that I read, people wrote it like that. Hmm. Like, oh, a woman Cheryl, and then they described a woman Neve.
Oh, well,
like,
they're
okay,
probably
but they are the same person.
Not to necessarily spoil. I mean, spoil feels like a really strong word for it. I guess you could have misinterpreted. Maybe she has a twin or something. But I think it was pretty clear that we were meant to understand it was the same person, and there was just like something we were missing about how she got from being Cheryl to being Neve that explained her issues. But, like, it could have been that she had been in an abusive relationship and she changed her name to escape an abusive partner. It just so happens she also abandoned her children when she was doing that, so I somehow
but
doubt
it was,
that was the motivation.
Yeah, and Ian brings it up, too, at one point. I believe he's the one that does. And he says, like, why wouldn't you bring them with you?
Right, yeah.
Like, I don't understand that. Why did you leave them? Knowing the man, oh, they were with their father. You just said to us that the father was abusive.
Well, that's why.
So why
I question,
would you leave them?
Yeah, that's why I question her entire story. I don't know that I believe that he was a dangerous person or abusive. He might have been a deadbeat. Maybe he couldn't afford to support their family and whatever. But I question a lot about what she says about why she left because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and it kind of drove me nuts too when. After the party, when she has that gala in the backyard and they show up and she flips a shit on them. And we find out, that is the moment we find out. And they're sitting in the house, the four of them, and she makes it seem that when she takes the wig off, she is this disgusting human.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to see her real, like, it just made me really uncomfortable because it was kind of like, girl.
You think this is a big reveal?
Like, it's like you're just not wearing a wig. And like just how she had herself in just a slip, like nightgown. And like her real hair was meanwhile, it was braided underneath. Like, just.
Right.
She made it seem like she is this rundown human if she doesn't wear the wig and put on this persona.
Right.
And it doesn't need to be like that. And again, it was her trying to get sympathy for doing the worst possible thing she could have
absolutely
done
she only cared about herself, period. She took self-care to the extreme.
The actress who I will always know as
Revenge.
Ashley Madwicki. I don't know how to say the last name,
mm-hmm.
but I think she played it very well.
She did. For she being such an annoying person and horrible person, I think I could have hated her a lot more.
She played the selfish snob very well.
Maybe if she had been played by Amy Adams.
Oh, and guys, do we have a surprise for you? But yeah, so that was the Strays.
Yeah, not as painful as I thought it could be. So
no,
and it wasn't too long. It just felt long.
It did, because I did stop it at one point and saw I had 45 minutes left, and I was like, and I've seen this already, so why is this so torturous?
Right, yeah. It slows down halfway through, but it's only an hour and 40 minutes or something. And the credits are super long because I paused it at one point.
They start at 7 minutes left.
Yeah, I paused it at one point and I was like, okay, great. There's only like 12 minutes left, so like that's great. And then the movie was over in like 4 minutes and I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's a nice surprise.
Yeah, because I'm like, wait, is there something after this? Because it's the scene where the four of them staring at the door after she leaves. And I'm like, there's 7 minutes left, though.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, no, it's over.
I didn't stay to watch if there was an after credit scene, so I don't know.
Neither did I.
I was done.
But I will tell you, though, because I have subtitles on.
Sure.
I did catch the name of the song that they play at the end.
Oh, yeah. if you're so white, you're black or something.
If you're not white, yeah. You're black.
Yep.
And I was like, oh.
A little too on the nose. Well,
in this case, if you're not black, you're white. Yeah. So that's really the story we have going on here.
Oh, boy. Well, it's kind of like all those reality TV shows where they somehow find the exact perfect song to fit the exact perfect situation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, people found it disturbing. Seen better, seen worse.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a 4.8 out of 10. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I would put it solidly in the middle.
But... Yeah, we will be on a movie break coming up.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
A hiatus, if you will.
Quite the hiatus. Because we are, which at this point...
Yeah, we can announce it. Let's just say it.
We can announce it. We're doing Bridgerton.
The Bridgerton Project.
The Bridgerton Project. From the beginning. So, guys.
And we're trying to get this all done before the season 3 premiere. So when we said buckle up, we meant buckle up.
Yeah. We'll be doing 4 episodes per one of our episodes because the premiere of season 3 is May 16th.
Yes.
And it's the part 1 because Netflix loves to do this now where they make seasons in half. They cut them in half.
Yeah, they drop them into two different events.
Yeah. But then like at the time, like if you were to watch them at a leisurely pace... By the time part 2 comes, you're ready for it anyway.
Right, it would be 4 weeks until part 2, so if you watched 1 a week.
Right, I mean, this ain't no Emily in Paris, that's for sure.
It absolutely is not. But maybe it is.
So, come on a journey with us as we dive into Bridgerton. You know, in the meantime, too, we're not going back to movies.
No.
Movies will always be around. We will be back. So in the meantime, if you have any suggestions, because I think we're like at the end of our list that I've made. I've also not taken on any new ones right now because it's kind of like the whole rewatching scenario.
Yes,
I don't know when we're going to do it, if we're going to do it.
Yeah.
So anybody has recommendations, feel free. I mean, TV shows too. We will take stuff on.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, let's fucking do it.
Think of the worst ways you can torture us and we'll let you.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fun. It's always fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
little bit.
Most of the time. Sometimes I want to stab myself in the eye, but...
Stabby stab central over here. But yeah, so join us on our Bridgerton journey, which will be going clearly through June. And keep an eye out on the socials, on the website, for any other, you know, news. And like I said, feel free to message us, hit us up on X and Instagram for any suggestions you may have, opinions, what have you. And is there anything you would like to add?
It is National Animal Crackers Day. So what's your favorite animal cracker?
Oh my God, I will tell you right now because I think I still have it in my desk drawer. This is a great story. I did not know it was National Animal Cracker Day.
Well,
and I will have to post this picture.
Yes, you will.
I one time got an animal cracker. They were unfortunately molded together.
Oh no!
But it looks like one is humping the other one.
Oh wow.
It's clearly like an elephant. Yeah. Or a hippo mounting a tiger. It's
oh my God.
And I had to preserve, I saved it. I mean, it's an animal cracker, so it did not get moldy or disintegrate or anything.
Yeah.
So it's in my desk drawer at work, and it's been there for years.
That's fucking hilarious. And I really hope that you pass it down to, like, the next generation or something. Like, in your will, leave it to someone deserving or something. Like, this animal cracker must survive you and all right? of us.
It has to, like, obviously you're not eating it. Although, again, it looks like it's fresh. Like, it fresh, doesn't look old.
Fresh animal cracker.
But it, like, it looks straight out the box like you just bought it.
Straight out
like,
the
it
box.
Does not look old or corroded. It's not like when chocolate gets white because it's old. Like, it looks spanking new.
Like a fresh animal cracker.
Like a...
Still got that crunch.
Fresh boning animal crackers. So that is my favorite animal cracker.
Oh my gosh. Well, we cannot top that. Can you please take us out?
Oh my gosh. Well, until next time...